You sure? All right, we'll go ahead and call the July 19th meeting of the Los Osos Groundwater Basin Management Committee meeting to order. So can we have a pledge, please? You get the honor since you're lucky up here.
Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Secretary / Executive Director.
Yeah, let's do it. Thank you, sir.
Can you have a roll call, please?
Director Zimmer.
Here.
Director Garfinkel.
Here.
Director Alternative Hutchinson.
Here.
Chairperson Olhelski.
Present. So we'll start at that end. Do we have any comments?
None from Gold State.
I have none. None, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Seeing none, we'll move on to the consent agenda. There's two items on there, the approval of the minutes from May 17th and June 21st. And approval of warrants, budget update, and invoice register through June 2017. First of all, does anybody want to pull an item? Okay, seeing none, does anybody want to have any questions?
Mr. Chairman, I would note that I believe I was present for only one of those meetings.
Okay. Any questions?
Just give me a second. I found an error, or it looks like an error in the financial. Get there. Under the director's report 6B, that's what we're talking about now. We're from last
5A and 5B consent 5B. Agenda.
Give me a moment here. On 5B, the line on the chart, attachment one chart, you show on line, line 5, semi-annual seawater intrusion monitoring.
Ah, that percent doesn't look too good, does it?
And your math is wrong. It says 40.3%. We spent $10,000 against $15,000.
Yes, I agree with you.
Okay.
We'll get that corrected. Thank you. The totals should be still correct.
Yeah.
Okay, so public comments on the consent agenda? Okay, seeing none, we'll close public comments on the consent agenda. Do we have a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda as is.
I'll second that. With,
as amended, you mean?
As amended, yes.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, passes unanimously. With that, then, we'll move on to item number 6, which is the Executive Director's Report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A number of items on the report today, and I'll flash a few things up on the screen here as we go. I think I'd first like to note that I provided a link to the final letter that went out to the Planning Department and the Coastal Commission, just so you can all see the final version that you approved at your May meeting, and that's now available on the web for reference. And then our annual report was done in June, as you recall, and that has been posted both to the DWR website and the Basin Management Committee's website, so they can see that under documents if you're looking at our website at slocountywater.org at the lower right-hand corner. It's also been filed with the court, and we're just awaiting that confirming date back from the court. I also wanted to note that one of our staff attorneys noted that a judge has been changed back to Judge Crandall as the presiding judge in the case. So those of you who have been at this for a while remember Crandall had previously.
I have a question on the letter that you sent to the Coastal Commission, though. And it may be my memory, but the final portion, which is the Basin Management Committee recommendations in that letter, I thought we had agreed to have some other wording, especially as to that further development should not occur until we had met some of our metrics. And I see all that is gone now in the final letter.
Yeah, if you look at the minutes, we had a pretty good detailed record of what was discussed. And right. We had been through a few different iterations of that at the end, but I think the version that's been published is the one that we ended up agreeing to.
Okay, because it makes no reference to having to meet any of the metrics.
There is some general language there, but they took out some of that specific language. We try to do a good job in the minutes capturing the actual discussion if you go back and look at the back and forth there.
Yeah, and my recollection was that there was language prior to that in the letter that addressed that issue, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, there was a couple of different versions that we discussed when we were here.
But I mean in that same letter, but in prior sections, because I know Supervisor Gibson was the driver behind that language.
Right,
so.
Right. But if you have something specific you want to email to me, Bill, I can bring it back. But if we need to clarify, but okay. Definitely the version that's posted is the one we agreed to.
Thank you.
One of the things we wanted to do was provide an up-to-date, and we will continue to do this as data comes out. All this interim data that we throw at you, of course, will be incorporated into the annual report, but one of the purposes of this meeting is to make sure we get this out as soon as we can. And we added an additional data point based on the final compiled spring data that I wanted to show on the chart here. You've all seen a version of this chart, and it is a compilation of the spring 2017 metrics, the chloride metric and the lower aquifer water level metric. In the previous version that you saw, the red line, which is the chloride levels, is the same as the version you previously saw, that the chloride metric's down. For this spring at around between 150 and 160, but we didn't have the compiled and checked water level measurement, and we now have that incorporated in blue. So you can see that on the left axis here, we've got the water levels, and we've come up above 2 feet with this index now for this spring. So that's the first time in quite a long time that we've been above 2 feet, so since 1980. So that's, again, it's just a snapshot in time. This could go right back down in the fall. All the disclaimers you've heard me say every time. But it is, somewhat encouraging that we did see a bump in water levels, and that's why the chloride levels reacted to that water level pressure. So wanted to make sure we got that out there for you to see. Any questions on that before I move on to the rest of the report? Great. Continuing to look at grant opportunities, there's an IRWM meeting here in Los Osos that a number of people from the public attended, and we've got some of our projects in the IRWM process, and we'll continue to pursue those grant opportunities. Similar update on the zone of benefit analysis, and this is going to come up a little more when we talk about the monitoring well. Staff continues to reflect, I think, the committee's input that to go out for a two-thirds special tax right now would be a very difficult venture to get passed, perhaps. And now that the CSD has enacted a rate increase to fully fund its share of the Basin Management Committee projects, staff's not currently pursuing that special tax measure, and we're talking under a different agenda item about the reallocation of this year's budget for a monitoring well. So there's an update on that issue. In terms of SGMA, Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, the county is continuing to lead the charge on the fringe areas, the shallow alluvium that's on the eastern side of our boundary, and they're holding a meeting for those fringe areas next week on July 20, and it's primarily focused on the individuals who own property in that area, though it is open to others. That's at 6:30 p.m. at the South Bay Fire Training Center.
Would you like to clarify the date? You said July 20 next week. July 20 is tomorrow.
Oh, well, wonderful. July 26th.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you for that. And so no action needed on that. We wanted to keep you up to date. They have retained Cleith Harris geologists to do the characterization studies for the fringe area, so there'll be some continuity there. The work on the creek discharge analysis is continuing, and they were able to get a sample out of the flowing Los Osos Creek, which now has stopped flowing. A member of the public let me know that's no longer occurring, but they had about 2 cubic feet per second that was flowing through the creek last month, and they were able to get a good and full sample, and they ran a full suite of constituents, and I've attached the results there, which you can read at your pleasure. But let me give you the bottom line. It met all the drinking water standards. So certainly we're pleased to see that the water that would be used potentially as mixing water for the creek discharge appears to be of good quality for that purpose. So I think this is the first time that full suite had been run on Los Osos Creek. So we'll also be sharing this data with Lexi Bell and the Morro Bay National Estuary folks who help fund the sampling. So appreciate their partnership. An update on the Los Osos Wastewater Project. The county has exceeded the 90% threshold on lateral connections. We're sitting at 91%. That's a little over 3,800 out of 4,200 laterals. There are additional laterals that remain to be connected in all three phases, and we provided a phase breakdown there. So the pace of connections has slowed, I hear, significantly. as the last 10% or so are grappling with the cost and the logistics of connecting. Mark, feel free to jump in if you want to add any specifics there.
I think it would be important to point out so people know we have scheduled a meeting at the board on August 15th to talk about how to move forward with encouraging those who are now out of compliance with county code to get those laterals in place.
Okay. Thank you. I thought that was part of your process there. Flows at the treatment plant continue to be a bit variable. They've actually, the average has come down a little bit from the last that I reported, and they're averaging around 430,000 gallons per day, and on the weekend, 470. So whether we actually hit 500,000 gallons a day is remains to be seen. So flows remain low. Plant remains in compliance, and the water is being discharged to Broaderson still. No water has been delivered to irrigation customers, though I know those discussions of school retrofits and the scope of that and the specifics of the agreements are still being worked on by the county and the purveyors. And I think with that, I've completed my report.
Any questions before we go to public comment?
None.
No. I would just point out one thing on the first page.
Sir.
The date should be July 19th, not July 14th.
Ah, I wrote it on the 14th. Yeah.
Well, if you want it, if it's the authoring date, that's fine.
It
but
is.
The meeting date is today.
Yes.
Okay, so can we have public comment on the executive director's report? You're gonna keep
Lindy Owen. I wondered, Rob, if you can explain why we might see such an increase in the water level and then a drop in the chlorides. Is there any thing, because that's pretty extreme. So, and any update about how the sewer is working? Because we keep seeing crews tearing up streets again, going back in, and so. And I also wonder when Broaderson will start sharing that water in places that are more needed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Steve Best, I specifically wanted to know more about the issue on the water that is going to Broaderson. What is the condition of that water, how it meets the conditions for it being used for irrigation, the standards that it's meeting, and what kind of regulations it's going to be allowed to be used for residential use as well as commercial use, and the what kind of fees it's going to be allowed to be charged for that water, and who is going to be collecting and using those fees. Those are important issues for this community. Are those fees going to be going to the county? Are they going to be going to for Los Osos? And how are those fees going to be implemented for use of this to maintain this community? Thank you.
Any other public comment? Okay, seeing none, we'll close public comment. Rob, would you like to respond?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, responding to Lindy's question about that graph, if you look at the red chloride metric, you can see the three final data points there bounce by a factor of first up 30 to 40 milligrams per liter and then down more than 50. So what that reflects is that seawater intrusion, the chloride levels you get from seawater are so high that those wells that are sitting on the boundary react very quickly to changes in that front. So these are your wells that are sitting right on the boundary, and one of the wells, which is the Rosina well, is actually weighted as a factor of two because it sits right on that front. And so that's what makes this metric jump around. As you know, you can see the fight going on. We're fighting seawater intrusion front. The water level metric should be more stable. And so you see that it only came up, maybe a foot. And so that's a more modest increase in the blue there. So, and certainly that's in response to reduced pumping within the groundwater basin, increased recharge associated with having a good rainy season. But we'll see what happens in the fall. As to whether our understanding of those patterns is fully vetted with the model and everything else, I think we have a general understanding, but that's one of the reasons to actually measure these things and compare it to actual rainfall. So we're not just modeling, we're looking at reality. But it is a pretty extreme response. But don't be surprised in the fall if that chloride jumps right back up, because I know at least in the district systems, people, while they're still conserving, have perhaps read a lot of the press that, you know, the drought's over, we got plenty of water in the state. You hear that a lot in the press. And that's, I think, lost on some of the people in our local groundwater basins where conditions are still critical. And maybe we're seeing people relax on their conservation a little bit, at least based on what we're seeing this summer at the district. As to the operation of the county system, I could speak to the quality of the effluent is still good. I have seen some crews out working on a collection system. I don't know if that's maintenance or repair. Mark, I don't know if you have any comment on that.
No, I'm not aware that there's any major maintenance or repair issues on the collection system. We've done quite a bit of work on the pocket pump stations at the numbered street ends to make those work more efficiently and also ensure that we don't get rainwater inflow to the system. And we've coordinated with the Los Osos CSD and their collection system, some up at Bay Ridge, so that we can, make sure that it's properly maintained going forward. As to sales of the water, we are in discussions with a number of customers, the water purveyors in town, all three, the golf course involved, a couple of farmers involved. The county itself is not in a position to deliver water directly to some other water customers or water companies' customers. That's a violation of state law. So we will sell or deliver the water to one of the three water purveyors. They will intend and then in turn have recycled water customers. As far as farmers go, I think their preliminary agreements have a cost in it. I'm not aware what that is. Any revenue that the county derives from the sale of recycled water benefits the wastewater project. It stays in that project. That's typical of all county water and wastewater systems. They're closed funds. The only element in Los Osos where there would be money going out of the fund is to repay loans from the county general fund, which seeded the initial operating costs of that system.
And maybe to piggyback on that, I know when I worked on the CSD's rate analysis for the sale of that recycled water, we were expecting that would have some nominal discount to it, to the schools, like a 10% discount. And in our rate model as a CSD, that's what we assumed would be the slightly discounted rate for recycled water. The condition of the water, it does meet all of the definitions within Title 22 for a tertiary disinfected recycled water. So that means bacteriologically it's similar to drinking water, very low levels of bacteria, very low levels of turbidity, so the clarity of the water is very clear. And with the special standard for nitrogen removal to hit 7 milligrams per liter compared to a drinking water level of 10, so it's got to be a little less than 3/4 of the drinking water level for nitrogen content. So pretty highly treated water certainly can be used for turf irrigation at schools, for commercial properties. The residential uses are more limited within the state right now by regulation. That may be relaxing over time. Currently, the residential uses are limited to homeowners associations for things like front yards when those are held in common and other common area irrigation. It's not currently being delivered in the state for single-family residential use, but that does happen in other places, and we certainly think that the state may be changing their tune at some point as they see how safe this water is to use. Mr. Chair?
That's it?
Yeah.
Ready to move on? Okay, so we'll move on to action items. Pardon me, 7A. 7A is update on the status of the Basin Plan infrastructure projects. Recommendation is to receive, report, and provide input to staff for future actions.
This is a standing item as opposed to an action item, but it does provide a snapshot for the...
Rob, could I just clarify, sure. Go back, because I see the audience talking about this.
Sure.
I just want to make sure everybody understands. State law precludes this water from being used at single-family residence unless there's an HOA.
Right.
Okay. I just want to make sure everybody's clear about that. It's nothing that we have control over. It's state law that mandates that.
Right. And my personal perspective is I'd like to see that state law changed.
Well, a lot of people.
Yeah. And if folks see anything in the news or anything that indicates that is changing, I'm, of course, always available to talk about that.
Okay. So we'll go back to 7A. Sorry to interrupt.
Thank you. So first I'll go through the programs here, and then I'd like to talk a little bit about the district's recent rate increase that was enacted to fund its share of the Basin Management Program. A quick update on the CSD's 8th Street Upper Aquifer well. Again, that's a well that's intended to use upper zone water to blend with another lower zone well. There is nitrate in that water and some chromium-6, but all at a blendable level. And so the district just awarded a consulting contract to a local firm to design the what we call the upfit or the equipping of that well. And so that design will occur over the next 4 to 6 months, and then we'll go out to bid for the installation of a pump and the blending facilities necessary to bring that well fully online, and still think that will happen in time for next summer's irrigation season. The Golden States Skyline Blending Project is progressing. That's where they're bringing in the nitrate removal unit so they can get full use of their Skyline well. And that unit has been delivered and will be in the startup phase over the next month or two. And they're still looking at potential full use of that unit in August, September. So as you reach the end of the summer, we should see some progress there. Going on to Program B, we note that that same project, that Skyline project, really can be viewed as a first phase of Program B, in that they're implementing an expandable nitrate removal facility. On to Program C, the Los Olivos expansion well number one, we've been reporting that it's close to being operational. It's now fully operational and pumping as of the end of June, and so that will be another critical asset for Golden State to be able to manage their water resources. And we continue to pursue properties in various locations on the east side under the CSD's efforts, and those discussions and studies are ongoing.
Sure. I just want to talk about Los Olivos question. So that well, your report says, is now fully operational, but so what's the time frame for that to be fully operational?
It is operational today. So okay. We have it. It's fully operational.
It's pumping.
Yeah. We completed it.
Easy answer.
Yeah. It's going. And then you see the rest of the projects there are in a pending state with respect to Los Osos Valley Water Main and the Golden State S&T interconnection. And we'll be talking about the lower aquifer monitoring well as its own agenda item later on. Circling back just to let the full committee know. A lot of the community members I see are those familiar with our CSD. But we did enact a three-year rate increase. It took us a good 8 months to work through and talk about. And the intent of the CSD's increase was to be prepared to fully fund our share of the capital for the Basin Management Program, at least the CSD share. And so we targeted net revenues during this fiscal year, which just started in July 1, of $500,000 this year, $700,000 next year, and $900,000 the year thereafter. So our customers got a significant rate increase. There was a lot of good community input into that. It ended up being very strongly supported by all of our committee members on utilities and finance. And so it really provides an opportunity for a funding stream, at least for the CSD share of those projects, that I think will really benefit the basin going forward.
Is that all of the projects or just certain projects?
Our portion of all the projects.
All the projects.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I thought we were up around $11 million for that.
Well, it's the programs A and C are the projects that we fully budgeted for within the CSD's capital program. Okay. So all the numbers you see under the CSD's column were... That doesn't mean we have the cash in the bank today, but it means we're targeting net revenues sufficient to accomplish those projects, either as pay-as-you-go where we can or debt service where needed. So if we got into a situation where we have a good east side site for an expansion well, we'd be able to pursue funding for that, either, again, pay-as-you-go to drill it, and then perhaps debt service to equip it. So,
thank you.
Yeah. Any questions on status of the Basin Infrastructure Program?
I'd just like to make a comment on that. I think it's, you know, really fortunate for the community to be moving along in these projects. You know, it's just a big effort on both of the water purveyors to properly fund and prepare and make these types of investments in the community. So looking at the future, you know, what we've accomplished today, you know, hopefully we continue to see what we're seeing up here and be optimistic that that's going to continue to be the path and pay off on these efforts. When we look at our program C and the cooperative funding, I think that kind of clarifies what you're referring to when you funded your portion of that. Golden State's also been entering into discussions about these projects and don't have full funding for that or for full approval for that, but we you know, we've discussed it with the district, and as we move through the community, we'll continue those discussions and work on these projects together as a group. And then the only one that I did have a question on is the LOV main upgrade. We still have that as a pending pending funding through a vote. Should we change that status, or because we're talking, our next agenda item is going to be to remove some of that funding for that vote. So we either need to clarify that, determine if that's needed. You know, I mean, maybe the reason for that main upgrade was always to allow the conveyance of water from these expansion wells, and maybe those wells aren't going to produce what we thought, and that those main grades, those upgrades might not be needed. But it's just that comment right there might need to be clarified. But yeah, I think overall, you know, it's just it's a good opportunity for the purveyors, and how we're progressing through with our plan and implementing it together is something that we should both be proud of.
Agreed. Yeah, I think that water main, when we first modeled and conceptualized that, people were using 40% more water, and the flows were greater. It may be that if we revisit it, that either can be deferred to program D as in dog, or otherwise rescoped. So that's why that's not one we're aggressively pursuing. I think if we got a good east side well today and needed to wheel that water through the Golden State system, we could do it without significant increases in pressure to your existing customers. Mr. Chair, I think we're ready for a public comment.
Okay, public comment on 7A. Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back. Close public comment. So, does anybody have any additional input for Rob at this point in time? Okay, we'll move to 7B then.
Wonderful, and I'm going to invite Erica to join me at the, so I don't have an extra mic. Actually, You could pull up a chair and I could share with you if you don't want to stand up there. But so Erica had done a nice job looking at the specifics of our bylaws and all the formational documents, all the things I really didn't want to do myself, and collaborate a little bit with Golden State staff. And so she just has a few comments here, and then I'll wrap up at the end.
Great. Thanks, Rob. I'm Erica Stuckey with the County Council's office. So as Rob indicated, your committee had previously talked about establishing a subcommittee to look at a public outreach plan that would try and coordinate and provide public awareness related to the various conservation programs within the basin. And so both Jenna Akos and I looked into the authority under both the stipulated judgment and your rules and regulations, and both permit the BMC to establish a subcommittee by resolution. So based on that authority and the requirements under the Brown Act, we listed four options for your BMC's consideration with respect to forming a subcommittee. And both the requirements of the stipulated judgment are that, and the rules are that a resolution be approved establishing the subcommittee. So if your committee chose to proceed with that, we would need to come back with a resolution. So I'm just going to briefly walk through the options, and then if there are any questions.
Erica, can I ask a question first of all? I have to play attorney for a minute here. I apologize. But just under the recommendation, and I just want, this is a consistency question I have. Under the recommendation, it says whose combined voting percentages total less than 50%.
Yes.
But yet when we get to the options, it says whose voting percentages do not exceed 50%. And I believe this should say do not exceed 50%.
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Just for clarification. All right, thank you.
So the first option is, as was sort of just mentioned by Chair Ohilski, is a committee composed of less than a quorum of directors, so two directors, and it is our recommendation that those directors not have a voting weight that exceeds 50%, just to avoid any potential Brown Act issues. So that committee would meet in consultation with staff, and then it would be anticipated that they would hold at least one public outreach meeting to get input from the various community members. And if it's formed as a temporary ad hoc committee, then those meetings do not need to be open public meetings. The second option would be a committee where the membership, there would be more options for membership, so you could have members of the committee and members of the public. But then if you open it up that way, the meetings would need to be subject to the Brown Act, so that would be less efficient, and thus is not recommended, given that staff thinks that public input could probably be accommodated through the public meetings discussed with respect to option one. Option three is no subcommittee and just have staff work on the public outreach plan and come back with updates to you and receive input from you as the full commission. And then the last option, option four, is to seek direct input from existing community groups. For example, the Sierra Club provided pretty focused and helpful input on the additional measures to the Water Conservation Implementation Plan. So your committee could ask for input from existing groups and not proceed with forming a new subcommittee. So those are the kind of short explanation of the four options. And again, staff recommendation is the first option, which is that your committee establish a ad hoc temporary subcommittee composed of less than a quorum.
I do have a question, though.
Yes.
Options one and two make it mandatory that S&T is
yes, that's correct.
One of the members of the right. Yeah, I see that. Does
we're
that happen?
You wouldn't pick up on that.
Yeah, well, I picked up very quickly on that one. Does that have to be the director, or can one of the purveyors appoint?
It needs to be a member of. It needs to be you. It needs to be the member. Yeah, and it's not necessary for option two because option two is a Brown Act committee, so it could be, you know, it doesn't even have to be members of this committee. But for option one, which is the non-Brown Act committee, it would need to be two members of your committee.
Can it be the alternate?
It could be an alternate. Pardon me. Okay. It could be the alternate. It doesn't have to be the committee member, correct?
The safest approach would probably be to have it be the actual member. I don't think there are any cases addressing it, but the statute requires members of the legislative body. So my recommendation would be that it be two of
someone else.
Supervisor Gibson's not here, but two of you up here.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah.
Any other questions? All right.
So. And I have a little post-discussion here, if I could.
Yeah. You want to do that now or after public comment?
Now would be good, okay. So the informed public comment. I just wanted to flash up on the screen the recently adopted new rebates under the County Wastewater Project, just so you can see that there are now available to the public rebates that might be difficult to get into the hands of folks who may not be aware of them because they've already connected their laterals and a lot of that process is already done, so people won't be focused on it anymore. So if there is an outreach effort, there is something to chew on this, and also the availability, of course, of Title 19 programs and other measures that may be available directly from the purveyors, there is information that needs to be disseminated. So if you don't have a hot water recirc system and want one, you can get a $350 rebate if you're within the collected area of the sewer system. Or if you've been thinking about gray water for years and want a little help, there's a $500 rebate available. So now's the time to take advantage of these. And if there is to be public information, this will be one of the things that we'll want to be getting out to the public.
We do have to put the caveat, now's the time to really seriously start thinking about those. We expect Coastal Commission Executive Director approval any day.
Okay.
But we don't
quite
have
it. Thank you for that clarification. So pending.
But it's good to start thinking about
great.
Those.
Sounds good. If the committee does prefer one of the options that requires some staff time here, we can talk about that and see if we can't fit that under our current arrangement and keep in budget or volunteer some time or however we need to do it.
Who changed on toilets from 1.28 to 1 or from 1 or less to 1.28 or less?
So that actually came up at one of our previous meetings, that because the 1.28s are seen by some as functioning better, being less experimental, they wanted to make those reachable for people who didn't feel comfortable going to the 1.0 or the 0.9. Certainly, if we're presenting public information, we do want to talk about the benefits of going all the way down to the 0.9.
The difference between 1.6 and 1.28, it's because this is only available to people who have 1.6 already installed, right?
Right.
So there's very little savings between those two.
Five flushes a day, it adds up.
Okay. There could be some tweaks to this thing, too, and
sure.
I'm just... Because one thing I thought about when I looked at this, like under option three, and I'm not volunteering to do this, but the committee chair could work with the executive director setting this program up. So option three could be tweaked a little, so it could be the vice chair or somebody just working with the executive director, so it wouldn't all fall on the executive director. But I just wanted to lay that out there as a tweak.
Sounds good.
I'm not going to express which one I favor till we're done with public comment. So, okay, so we'll take public comment on this item then, which is about the informational program here.
Linda Owen, I wondered, when you talk about the choice one would be the ad hoc with two directors, is this not going to include any community members? I didn't hear any discussion about how large the ad hoc might go, and so I'd be interested in hearing more about number one and number two, if that includes some of the community. So, and how often will you be meeting, and what's the goal deadline to come back with something?
Thank you, Lindy.
Steve Best. After briefly reading over this, it does not appear that option one includes public members as part of the committee, whereas option two does. And I see that the staff doesn't recommend it too, because it they tend to complicate things. But it's I believe it's very important that the community has the ability to be able to contribute as much as possible to the process, and when the community is left to only a 3-minute input, we are not part of the process. We are just white noise, and we don't. It's not a two-way dialogue. It's not a productive process. It's not a productive dialogue. The community needs to be part of the committee, and I believe that's the way it should be. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Lynette Tornatsky. I would just like a clarification that if you do choose option one, can community members email the ad hoc committee with their suggestions? Would that be possible? Thanks.
Thank you, Lynette.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, committee members. My name is Jeff Edwards. I just have a couple quick comments. If I understand this correctly, this committee is going to be formed to promote the rebate program, if that's correct. And I would just say that this rebate program is going to have limited participation, whether or not it's promoted or not. So I would object to the use of BMC resources on any of these committees or any of these options. If the program can't attract interest on its own, it's not worthy of your time or energy. And at the end of the day, my view is that the Basin Management Committee and staff should be focused on its core mission, and that is implementation of programs under the Basin Management Plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay. I would just, I'll make a quick comment to Jeff's last comment here. The purpose of this is for outreach on water conservation, not just for the rebate program. The rebate program is just a part of it, but it's for water conservation and reaching out to the public as so they know what measures are available and what measures are productive. But it's not just a rebate program. So, Rob, you want to address the other question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that's true. Couple questions on option one versus option two. So the way we've configured it at this point is that if there was an ad hoc committee under option one, it would not be subject to the Brown Act but could not have a standing member from the public. So there could be forums for public input, however you wanted to do that as an ad hoc committee, email, face-to-face, open dialogue, however you so chose to do it, but not an official member from the public. If you want an official member, we would need to be subject to the Brown Act and run through the same steps that we normally would. And then you could invite the public to apply, similar to the CSD requesting applications for its committees. And then members of the public, however large you want the committee to be, could actually participate as a member. We haven't costed out what this would take in terms of staff resources, because it would depend on which option you choose. If the meetings are not weekly, if it's a monthly or every other month a meeting, and the meetings don't last too long, I think it could be done, maybe in a low budget way. Even if you chose to do the Brown Act committee, perhaps the CSD could make its office available, and we could have some staff time donated or something. I would probably donate some time to it. So really, it's up to the committee here to see what you think would be the most effective. I do know that my strength is on the technical side. I love educating the public when they're here, but being strategic in the way to get that message out has never been my personal strength. So I need some help on it.
Bill.
If the committee incurs any need for financial funds, does it come from the Basin Management Committee, or do the individual members have to pay for? If, say, they want to hold a public meeting, and under option one to start off to get a kickoff, and they need to say rent facilities, is this all being paid for by the Basin Management Committee?
Yeah, I think it would be, and to the extent that you need just a meeting facility, it's pretty low cost. Even if you're here, yeah. It's very cost effective.
But if there are other things come in, like a need for a mailer or something like that,
that's when you get into real dollars.
Right.
But we have dollars for that in other budget items. If the hard dollars for say a mail campaign, we've got a water conservation line item in our budget. But what we don't have is a whole strategy as to what to tell the public, when to inform them, how often, all those things, the design of any products. We don't have that.
Would the committee make those decisions, or would they have to bring them to the full
No, board? It says in here for providing advice to the committee regarding the public outreach plan, so the committee has to adopt that.
Agreed.
The full committee.
Thank you.
So just to clarify on the members of this, it would be two board members that don't exceed 50% of the voting power. Who if it's not going to be the public, who else is going to be on this board?
That's it. Ad hoc would be those two members. And they can invite discussion from the public or from organized groups. But for the real members of the, under the ad hoc option,
yeah. It
can only be those two two participants. If you do the Brown Act Committee, you can have as many members of the public as you choose.
But if the ad hoc committee did, for example, a study session, there could be open discussion. It doesn't have to be.
Sure. Correct. But under this board and committee, two members could still get together and have an open discussion on a topic also, right? Without forming a committee, right?
I'll defer to our legal folks. I think that's true.
Oh, I'm wonderful.
Okay.
Yeah, we typically restrict our discussions to staff.
He's talking about informal discussions just between two board members.
But something that could be brought back at some point and put on the agenda for a more formal discussion. So really, I'm taking a step back.
Do you
back.
Want to go into spoken wheel and all that stuff, Erica, or should we just pass
no,
on
we,
that?
No, we don't need to. I'm just making a general comment just to help. Understand, and really what, looking back at how this evolved to where it is today was really, I think a key component was to have the public input into the process and really take some of the time and energy of the board here discussing these options where it would come back to us as more of a concise, we were getting an enormous amount of public comment from all different areas coming at us, and that was really what I perceived as how we were developing this. And by having this new understanding of what our legal constraints are, I wasn't aware of some of this till Erica explained it, and my initial feedback on it is that we're now creating another committee of our committee that I don't see the benefit of doing this just off the bat of what we're going to achieve or accomplish, and really eliminating the public out of it is undermining what my first impression of what we were going to achieve, because ultimately for these programs and the conservation, it's got to be the public and our customers that participate and buy into this. So I know that many of these, the county has their program inside the wastewater area, Golden State, the district, and really the water purveyors promoting those programs is going to be huge. So, you know, it's the role of the Basin Management Committee will help facilitate that, but I don't know if we need an ad hoc committee to really do that. And maybe it'd be on the board members that have programs to bring those before our board and just keep that dialogue and communication and the buy-in from our customers to participate in that. I had a discussion with our resources in Golden State before this, and you know, we did put information up on our website and things like that, directing, because Golden State's kind of in a unique situation where some of our customers are in the wastewater zone of influence and others aren't. And so how do you know which ones are going to go after these programs? We want to make sure these programs have already been paid for by those customers, and so we want them to take advantage of those. They're better programs, more incentive for them to go after those. So really having a lot of dialogue and input to our customers is important. So, you know, I've kind of changed my mind after hearing Erica what I came in today to do, but I think we need to have a little more discussion on it and thought.
And we can keep it on the agenda, yeah. Bring it back.
Well, I have... I've changed my mind, too, because I was the opposite of you. Now I've gone to where you were before. So I think if we did the ad hoc committee and then had workshops, that's accomplishing, I think, the exact same thing that we're talking about here, and not having the Brown Act regulations in effect, which, as is pointed out in the staff report, adds a lot of time, effort, and money to this project. But if we had an ad hoc committee of two committee members who said, you know, we're going to be at wherever, Starbucks, I don't, wherever, the Ale House, I don't pick some place here, you know, from 4 to 6 on Saturday to take input from the community and to get your feedback, you know, your input, I think that may be the most productive way to do this. So you and I have changed positions at this point from the way we came into the meeting. So.
Right.
I think, Mark, you know, when you were just talking about, we got all these different programs. How does somebody in Golden State know which one they're eligible and not eligible for? So the challenge is to get the word out, the public outreach. And the idea behind an ad hoc committee is to engage directly with members of the public and find out in a group setting what's the best way to do that and then bring that recommendation back to the BMC. It does sound like you're cutting the public out when you do an ad hoc committee with no public members, but I would agree with Marshall that that makes it easier for the public to have those conversations with actual BMC board members in different forums without having to stand at a mic and be recorded on the record. I would equate the difference to if we had the ad hoc committee here. Hopefully they would choose a time when more people are able to come in some sort of a semi-formal thing, but we wouldn't have a table with directors up here and somebody taking detailed notes. We'd have a big circle and some whiteboards around the room and be sharing ideas and getting that synergy going with a more free-flowing conversations. That's really the idea behind going, I think, with an ad hoc committee and the benefit of it. Is to set aside some of the formality of even this small meeting. Again, those are recommendations that have to come back to this mm-hmm. full committee before we can implement anything.
Well, Bill?
You also mentioned in this under the first paragraph of discussion, Title 19. How do you bring Title 19 changes into this discussion?
Well, I think having all of the available resources known to the public, I mean, there are people pursuing Title 19 credits for washing machines right now who are searching for places to place those washing machines. There are activities happening in the private sector on that front. So, like Marshall said, not just the county rebate program, but everything available. I mean, maybe it's the DWR's turf grass rebate. It's the full suite of opportunities that are available to people.
But doesn't that list up there on the screen, aren't those only for people in the, they don't call it prohibition zone anymore, you're calling it?
The wastewater service.
Wastewater.
These are just for wastewater service, whereas right. Title 19 covers the entirety of the basin.
But I think that the water conservation is also an educational process, as we talked about. So.
Yeah, drought's not over when it comes to Los Osos groundwater.
Oh, yes.
I have another comment just on the structure of this. So if we went to option three, could our alternative member be participate in that, or does that have to be the board?
You're talking about option two or option one?
Option three.
Well, I was talking about option three because Marshall mentioned that as one.
Direct staff to develop the community outreach plan. I see.
So, sure. Eric, a committee member could participate
sure.
in that. We just couldn't have two participate.
And so in any of these situations, we wouldn't be able to, if Golden State wasn't on there, I wouldn't be able to go to these meetings at all. I'd wait till I came back to the board, correct?
Unless you wanted to go and not participate, I guess.
And not participating is difficult because using any eye motion or head motion or body motion is participating, trust me.
Well, you know, this is the first time you've seen this, and this would go to any committees in the future that you might contemplate. So I think it's nice to have a legal framework. We can bring it back for you. In the meantime, staff, meaning me, would be interested in the emails and the input from community members if they have ideas that we can bring forward even in advance of this happening, particularly those of you who have noted what's been out there in the past, whether it's, you know, the bear and the Save Our Water or the posters or the postcard, things that you've said, this is really good, this not so good. That kind of feedback, I think, is very instructive to staff, being that we're not public relations experts.
Well, I'm going to close my comments on this. I mean, one and two are the preferable options in my mind, and the reason I'm going with one is because of the cost and the expense of doing Brown Act committees, dealing with the CSD and dealing with our committee structure. It's very, very time consuming and very, very costly, just because it has to be much more structured than it could be if we did the workshop under the first option. So that's why I'm in favor of the first option, because we can get this going much, much quicker and at less expense.
I have one other question. I do remember, even before I joined the ISJ committee, that the ISJ committee did some school outreach programs. Do we have any idea of how those programs worked out? Was there ever any documentation of what happened after we spent the money?
They were well received at the school level. Perhaps some people have a more intimate knowledge of what actually the feedback from the students was, but I heard positive things. I don't know if much is being done in the schools right now on water conservation. Maybe Golden State does some in the schools in its area.
But we did get good feedback from it back then. So, but that would, again, we just need to give some direction to staff here. If we just want to bring this back, or if we want to direct them to come back with a resolution for one or two or whatever we want to do, we just need to do something.
Well, you know, listening to the conversation here, a couple of things come to mind, at least from a county perspective. When we look at number one, as Bill's correctly noted, that adds him to the committee. And part of what this thing is doing is trying to, in essence, sort through everything that's been done in the past, figure out what works for Los Osos, and then roll it out again with more detail about how all of these different programs work together. To me, that says the second member of the committee needs to be somebody from Los Osos, who's that well connected to the committee and understands how things work here. Interestingly, though, if we did number one and we have two people, their goal is to reach beyond this committee and beyond everybody who's in our audience, because we're the choir. Everything's effective with us. And we think everything we get is really good. We're looking for people who can go out beyond sort of the circle of water savers. And I just think people who are from Los Osos and connected to the community are the best ones to do that.
If you do have an ad hoc committee, we would definitely advertise that to all our CSD standing committees and let them know, here's when the ad hoc meeting is coming. And we might have some that would engage pretty heavily in this issue, coerced or otherwise. Yeah, they would engage.
Good.
Well, we need some direction here, or we'll just punt this down the road here.
Why don't you go first?
I'd like to see it come back in the next meeting, and with that direction, I'm swaying between options 1 and 3.
We can bring back a resolution that's a little flexible there that we could adopt on the fly next meeting, so you don't skip another.
Well, we don't need a resolution for 3. That would just
be true. Well, we can bring one back at the next meeting to cover 1 in case you do decide to do it.
I'm more inclined between 2 and 3. But I don't think we're ready today to make that decision.
Well, I mean, what you could do then is, I hate to keep kicking this can down the road because it's something we've been talking about for an extended period of time, but I guess under option number 2, you could identify what the cost and the expense would be, et cetera, so
sure.
We'd have some criteria for looking at that, and then it would be the same thing here on option 3, what the cost and the time frame would be for both of those 2 items.
Yeah, you got it.
So if we're in agreement, then, well, we're not in agreement because I don't want to throw 1 out. So I think if we just get additional information regarding timing and funding, and then we can just bring it back. It sounds like nobody's in favor of option 4 at this point, though, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, correct.
Well, I think the beauty of option 4 is that you can accomplish that with any of the other 3.
That's true.
And there's a strong intent in the staff report that that's what you would be doing, is engaging all of those
part
folks
of
for their
so option, option 3 would be integrated into 1, 2, and or pardon me, option 4 would be integrated into 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So do you want to direct staff, in addition to bringing back cost information about 2 and 3, to bring back
cost and timing,
and do you want to add to that a resolution to implement option 1?
I think we need to look at 1, 2, and 3. I guess if I'm the only one in favor of 1, then we can let that drop because we're not going to get a majority vote on that.
Well, I think we should include 1, but I think we need to, just really the expense and burden on this, really look at, where would we have those meetings at, things like that. But including it in all 3 options, I think we should still have those on the table.
We'll flesh it out a little bit more as staff.
Yeah,
we'll put some numbers to it and bring you back something. And if we can have a resolution that can cover anything you might decide to do at the next meeting, we'll try to do that.
Well, as far as option 2 goes, I mean, you may want to also look at the numbers of the members of the committee would be. Because I can tell you, speaking for the CSD, we have a very difficult time filling our committees, which have 5 public members. So that's just the issue to be looked at there. So if we had,
we'll look at that. And I'll talk to the CSD management about that.
I think it would be you would have trouble getting people to sign up for this committee.
It's also not a standing committee. It's just a short-term committee.
Right,
so.
Exactly. Right. Question. Are we going to have a meeting in August?
Up to your pleasure, of course. Normally we skip a month to make sure we have enough content for the meeting.
I won't be available for a September meeting.
You will not be available in September?
September, yes.
And you don't have a standing alternate right now?
Oh, I have an alternate, yes.
Okay.
So.
Right. I think staff's got some general direction that's sufficient to bring it back, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All right. Okay, so then the last item is item 7C, the Cuesta by the Sea Lower Aquifer Monitoring Well. I'd like to thank Erica and further, and apparently somebody from Golden State's legal staff worked on it too. I'd like to thank them for their work. But 7C, Cuesta by the Sea Lower Aquifer Monitoring Well.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Wait, we've seen this drawing a number of times.
You have, but now it has a pretty red arrow on it. So this is a monitoring well that has been a target of this community since 2004 when under DWR grant funding we attempted to complete a monitoring well in this location. The hole collapsed. We were unable to complete it. So this has been a long-standing goal for the community because this is where there is a gap in our understanding. Is the front broadly moving in, or is it narrowly moving in? And when you see drawings of the seawater front or contours that depict it, it's really speculative without having this data point. And so this is an item to contemplate moving forward with the drilling of this monitoring well using Basin Management Committee budget resources from this calendar year. And as noted in your staff note, we have several committee budget items that relate solely to the special tax measure that was contemplated previously, the two-thirds majority that's required, and all the Prop 218 processes and the legal counsel necessary to bring that to a vote. So we had $110,000 just in those two items. We also have a healthy contingency that's almost $30,000, $26,000. So in total, for items that we're not currently pursuing or don't have contracts for, we're a little over $130,000 available. Now, I understand that you don't have to spend that money. I'm not saying that, you know, like last year, we rolled it forward. We didn't spend all our budget, and I'm not saying that you have to. But it did. Staff noted that the cost of this monitoring well is probably in rough concert with some of those available budget line items. Speaking a little bit to the physical construction of this well, it would be in the right-of-way, you know, maybe not right in the street, but right off the side of the street in a traffic-rated vault. The well would be screened at a minimum in our two lower aquifer zones, D and E, so that we can separately measure those zones. And that can be done in a single borehole. And then those two completions or two screened intervals can be monitored within that single well. Staff would love to have a zone C upper aquifer monitoring well also at this location, though that doesn't have the same level of urgency that the deep well has. While we believe that the physical construction of this well could be done for around $100,000, we are noticing that as drillers are very busy right now, a lot of our local drillers aren't proposing on new wells, and so we're seeing bids from out-of-town contractors that are above what we've historically seen. You know, back in 2004, this well was bid out at only $44,000. But it may be a little bit touch and go to get local forces to engage their time to bid this. So not a staff guarantee that we'll be able to bring it back for $100,000, but we're reasonably confident that we can. We may go in for an optional item for the upper aquifer zone. That might be, you know, maybe that's a $20,000, $30,000 item in the whole scope of things. So the first question will be, number one, is the committee open to the idea of shifting budget resources to this effort? This would be different than what we've done in the past in looking to do a physical project with a committee funding. And if you are interested in that, staff would then use CLEATH to prepare a focused bid package, get out to see what we can achieve in terms of bids, and then bring that back for action before we look to spend the bigger dollars. That concludes staff presentation of this item.
Go ahead.
The location is, do you have an exact location at this point, or just an approximate area? Or
we have two or three options. We'd like to leave that a little bit flexible, meet with some drillers. The big challenge is getting the rig positioned within the right-of-way without being forced to get on private vacant lots that have endangered species issues. We'd like to stay in the street, so yeah. We do have some ideas, yes.
If we drill a well in that location and discover that it's all salt water, what's our next step?
Think that's unlikely, hopefully very unlikely. We very well might detect a portion of the saltwater front, in which case the well will have been positioned ideally because we now have a monitoring point on the front.
Right.
And so if we start to see some chlorides in that water, we can postulate where in the front we're sitting in the wedge. If it's highly, I think it's very unlikely, given its location, that's going to be highly saline. I think we're going to be on the edge, which okay. is where we want to be. If we don't see any seawater, that will be an important data point because it will mean that the front is moving in that submarine canyon and it's avoiding the edges, which is what's saving one of your wells right
yes.
now, Bill, in that you've got fresh water without chlorides pretty far to the west because you're sitting on the side of that submarine
right.
canyon. Perhaps it's a mirror of that, but we don't know.
Okay.
We need to know.
So, that was my question, just about the 2004, picking that location in 2004 versus today. What, you know, is that still the optimal place that we'd want to put a monitoring well? And I think you answered it pretty good.
There is concrete deep down in the ground right now where we exactly drilled that in 2004 because we had to fill it full of concrete to destroy the remaining portion of the collapsed hole. So we're not going to drill in that precise location.
Mm-hmm.
Spencer was actually present back when that occurred with Cleith Harris.
Right. And then how will you go through the procurement process? Do you have to bid this out, or what's going to take place there?
I think we will have to bid it out. I think it will need to be pursued as a public works project. So staff would like to work on the bid docs in collaboration with your staffs to see what is the best way to physically do that. In the case of the CSD Golden State Intertie project that was completed recently here, the CSD ended up contracting for that, and that worked out pretty well, and we may be willing to do that as a CSD. So we'll bring that back to you if this is something you're interested in pursuing.
Okay, public comment on item 7C, requested by the sea monitoring well.
Good afternoon, committee. You've heard me talk about this before. Please move the money. Get this rolling, at least through the acquisition of bids, so you know what you're really, really looking at. This is important. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay. Seeing none, we'll close the public comment. So we're asking for input, or Rob's asking for input.
Well, I would support... I would support Rob's recommendation to move this forward, get some bids, find out what this would cost,
yes.
and see if we can't put some money on the ground and start getting an important piece of groundwater data.
Take that as a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Any more discussion? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Passes unanimously.
That's great.
Staff's happy. All right. So we'll move to item 8, which is comments, public comment on items not appearing on their agenda. So
Lindy again. I wanted to ask Rob the question I'll just ask every time. I know it's a hard one. Are you any closer to knowing how many years of water supply based on current usage remains available in our basin? I know even just an estimate would kind of give me a sense of what we're looking at here. And if it's okay, I kind of wanted to speak on the conservation program in a general way. I wanted to say that we have four conservation groups going that I know of. We have Golden State has theirs, CSD has theirs, the county has theirs, and then this committee has theirs. So in some ways, I feel like we are constantly. I like the idea of gathering what's worked well in other places, your suggestion, what worked well here and what didn't. And I think there's examples all over the country, too. If we found somebody that was motivated, Ron Munns, for example, slow city conservation guru, has practical experience about what's effective and where to go with trying to give people the motivation to be more conservative. As far as the water from Broderson eventually starting to go to the other directions, the schools, et cetera, I wanted to know, are we still trying to take water to dry land farmers, which is basically just throwing the water away, and have the pipes been put in yet? Maybe Mark Hutchinson could answer that. And I'm totally opposed to giving that water to somebody that doesn't use it currently for farming. We're supposed to be offsetting water use, not dumping it. I do look forward to the day that we can start having water deliveries to our home from this recycled water. I don't think we should ever let that idea go away. And then lastly, the discussion in Morro Bay to put in a their sewer is kind of going down the road of ours. It looks like it might be a 15-year nightmare. With people fighting and location and everything. I would like everybody to think about the idea that our sewer is overbuilt. We have more capacity than we need. We also have a location to expand if we needed. And the idea of a pipeline being brought over from Morro Bay has got to be cheaper than the $140 million or $180 million they're looking at right now. And it's just something to start thinking about because, again, that water would be coming over to us. Then we'd have to make a deal to give the water back to them because they probably could use it. But currently, they're dumping it in the ocean. So maybe, and it does several things. It might bring us more water. It lowers the cost to people in the prohibition zone. This sewer is very painful for a lot of people. And it would lower the cost for people in Morro Bay who will also suffer at their $200 a month flush your toilet bill. Okay, so I just want everybody to think about that. Okay. Thanks.
Steve Best again. I had a good conversation with the fellow at the presentation there at the IWRM or IRMW or whatever it is. We were there, and he liked the concept of the presentation that I've been talking about with the pool and reduction of the saltwater intrusion area, and wanted to know if there's been any input on that, any feedback on that. Also, we got to start thinking about. What can this community, what will this aquifer support in this community? How much will this aquifer support the current occupancy of this community? How much more building can this aquifer support? Are we already overbuilt for this aquifer? I could see the importance of being able to support the existing community as far as people being able to add an additional bedroom or bathroom, enlarge their kitchens and things like that. But be able to do the fill-in on the existing development that we do have with the numbered streets. And, for example, there's 20 buildable lots up there in the Cabrillo Estates area and so forth. But the areas that we're talking about, such as the Anastasia development over there by Sea Pines, you know, can we really handle building 100 new homes on a large parcel of property, or subdividing number of 1-acre parcels into eighth-acre lots, you know, throughout the Martin Track and so forth? You know, this idea of developing large parcels of property and into tracts of homes seems crazy for our community. The infrastructure that we currently have doesn't want to support it. You know, we're going to have one very unhappy town if we don't have the knowledge that, number one, we have enough water to support that. We have the infrastructure that supports it, as far as being able to people be able to move around within our community safely. Right now, a mother can't walk from point A to point B without being able to be in the middle of the street with her kids. You know, this community was never planned out right to begin with. So we have, you know, we don't know what's going on with our water right now. And to be giving, you know, will serve letters out is irresponsible. We should be putting a stop on handing out water permits until we understand what is going on with our water, how long will our aquifer last, and what it's going to take to maintain it and make sure it's a viable aquifer for this community for its lifetime.
Okay, anybody else? Okay, seeing none, we'll close public comment and we'll adjourn. Unless you want to respond to...
Oh, I just would love just...
Okay.
60
I'll give
seconds,
you a few seconds.
Thank you, sir. So I know Lindy's been asking about the years remaining. I know in the annual report we do finally have some good published volumes of fresh water available above sea level. And so you can look at those volumes and come to some of your own conclusions. So I'd just caution you, like I have in the past, that that's not a static thing. That's not like a pool that just that's all you've got, because every year there's more recharge and more extractions. But that's the best number we have today. And the Morro Bay option was interesting. And as far as the pool concept goes, I have had some discussions with our groundwater modeler about that. And so there is some action on that and discussing whether that would be a benefit or not. And we'll continue those discussions with staff.
Okay, so we'll adjourn until our August meeting, unless we... Or are we going to defer that meeting?
It's probably going to be in September,
sir. Okay. So we'll adjourn until our next meeting, which will probably be September. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.